Welcome to Data Science Perspectives. This series focuses on analytics and data science professionals from across industry to learn about how their career unfolded, what skills they look for when hiring, and what trends they think are coming next. I'm your host, Bill Franks. Let's get to it. Welcome to this episode of Data Science Perspectives. I'm your host, Bill Franks. Today, I'm going to be joined by Kathleen Maley. I first met Kathleen during my time at the International Institute for Analytics, as she was an active member of the community and also attended a variety of events. She's one of those people who's very easy to talk to, and as you'll see soon, very enthusiastic about the world of data science and analytics. She currently serves as the Vice President of Analytics for Experian, one of the largest data providers in the world. Prior to Experian, Kathleen spent several years running her own consulting firm and also serving as Chief Analytics Officer of DataZoom. Prior to that, she had spent nearly 15 years in the banking industry with both Bank of America and KeyBank, holding SVP roles later in those 10 years and some more junior roles earlier. She's focused on a variety of different analytic methodologies over time, including customer and digital analytics, pricing, quantitative analysis, and risk. She was also recently one of the 19 people interviewed to be part of a book called Creators of Intelligence by Alex Antic. Kathleen has a bachelor's in math from Bryn Mawr College and a master's in applied statistics from the University of Michigan. And with that, let's welcome Kathleen to the show. Thanks for joining me on the show today, Kathleen.
It's great to be here, Bill.
So one thing I love to start with is just finding out how people got into the world of data analytics and data science. And, you know, in your case, your degrees are actually in math and statistics. So you were obviously into this stuff from the beginning. How did this all come to be?
Well, it's funny because I wouldn't say I was into statistics from the beginning, and math happened due to lack of imagination, I would say. So I went to college and I had no idea what I wanted to study, but math was just always a thing. My mother was a math teacher, and, you know, the expectation was we would take math and calculus in high school. So anyway, I studied math, and I thought statistics was for people who couldn't do math. I didn't realize how different the discipline really is. It really is more of a science like physics or chemistry, where there's a lot of underlying mathematics involved, but it itself is not math. So first out of college, I was a teacher. And when I was asked to teach an AP stats course for the first time, I thought, well, I can probably figure it out. And it turns out I really enjoyed it, to the extent that I finished my two-year contract. I was teaching in China at the time. I finished my two-year contract. I went back to graduate school full-time for 2 years. So one of my favorite expressions is avoid contempt prior to investigation. And that's actually, you know, played a role several times in my career. And I'm fortunate that I got over that and found statistics.
It's interesting when you mention statistics and that it is different from math, because I found the same thing. I view it is a lot of math in it, but it's a slightly different type of math. It's a little more applied. And so I actually think that that's part of why so many people will claim that their class they hated the most in college was statistics. I hear a lot of that, but I think it's because almost everything you were to take in college is a continuation of what you did. It's the next math, the next English, the next history, the next biology. And statistics is one of those things that a broad swath of people take, and it is the first time they've been exposed to it. And I think that's what causes a lot of people to pain.
And I would say it's actually very, very different. And one of the things that is different about it that actually made it very hard for me in the beginning to sort of make that mental shift, mathematics is black or white. It is or it is not. It is binary. Statistics is the science of doubt. It's all about how confident am I in zero or one. And so making that slight mental twist, not looking for the right answer, but looking for the most probable outcome. Once I was able to make that shift and really appreciate statistics as the science of doubt, that's when I was able to fall in love with it.
Well, interestingly as well, your first couple jobs, you were a high school teacher, and not only a high school teacher, but in a couple of different foreign countries. So how did that come about? That's definitely not the typical post-grad career path.
No. I would say my life is largely by accident, and I'm often Very surprised that I haven't just fallen into a manhole and disappeared, given the amount of planning that I've put into my entire life. So I studied math. My mother was a math teacher. I was getting ready to graduate. I had no idea what I wanted to do. I didn't even know what one could do with a degree in math. But I knew I wanted to feed myself, and I knew I wanted to be able to pay rent. And so I earned my teaching certificate as a hedge because I thought, if I can't figure out what to do, I know I can teach. I know I can teach math. And then I stumbled across an opportunity to teach overseas. And I was fortunate enough to be hired by a school in Costa Rica. So I started my teaching career in Costa Rica, taught for 3 years there, and then 2 years in Mexico City and 2 years in Shanghai, China, which is where I encountered statistics for the first time in a meaningful way. So it really was more about avoiding what I knew I didn't want, which was unemployment. And I'm fortunate to have really come to enjoy it. And I still love teaching. And I see a big part of my job is that of a teacher. We don't call it teaching, we call it mentorship or we call it thought leadership, but it's really teaching. And I love that aspect of it. I love helping other people understand what it is that we do. And for those of us who are doing it, how we can do it better. What are those skills we absolutely have to have that no one even told us we needed to have? You know, outside of the programming and the statistical theory and methodologies, there's actually a lot required to do this job well, this job of being an analyst in business. And that's part of what I love about the job.
Yeah, it's funny. That's probably part of why we've always gotten along so well, because we have that same similar attitude. And I think where we've intersected has largely been, leading workshop sessions or giving a talk and so forth, which I agree with you 100%. I often tell people, while I ostensibly had a career in consulting for many, many years, I've always viewed the consulting really as teaching more than, more than anything else. And so I totally get where you're coming from. So after your teaching stints overseas, you came back and you spent a number of years, close to 15 years in the banking industry with both Bank of America and KeyBank. So what brought you over into that banking industry, and then what did you learn during that time period?
So again, very accidental, very serendipitous. My last few months teaching in China, I knew that I was going to be going to the University of Michigan to earn my master's degree. I intentionally went after a program for applied statistics. I knew I didn't want to become a researcher or a professor. I also happened to meet the man who eventually became my husband. He came to China to visit his brother. His brother and I worked together. And, we just hit it off. So I knew I was coming back to Michigan. He was located in North Carolina, Charlotte, North Carolina. When I finished graduate school, as I was finishing graduate school, I had a couple of decisions to make. One, did I want to go back to teaching or did I want to apply this degree that I had just spent 2 years learning? And I thought, I think I want to apply this degree. I happened to be very, very interested in population study. I had really wanted to join the Census Bureau and would still be very interested in working for the Census Bureau at some point. But the Census Bureau didn't have the type of work I would do in Charlotte, North Carolina. And by the end of those 2 years, obviously my relationship with my now husband progressed. I said, if this is a thing, I'll come to North Carolina. If it's not a thing, I'm going home to Southern California. And he said, it's a thing, come on down. So as a statistician, going to Charlotte, North Carolina, the two obvious choices for employment were Bank of America and at the time Wachovia. And so 50-50 shot, I ended up at Bank of America, stumbled into banking. I've never, with the exception of one role, I've never considered myself a banker. I've always considered myself to be a statistician, to be an analyst who works in banking. So although I've learned a lot about banking, I'm still an analyst first. And it was an unbelievably exciting time to be in banking because applied analytics had existed in siloed use cases, credit, in some cases marketing. But we were really just beginning to appreciate the power of data and analytics applied more broadly. So again, all of these sort of accidental coincidences sort of came together to give me this incredible opportunity to learn analytics in one of the earliest industries to adopt it in its current form.
Well, I imagine how different your career would have been had you ended up at the Census, which I don't know that people would know, would be aware of this today, some of the younger folks, but back in the day when we were going to school, one of the biggest organizations that hired statisticians was the Census Bureau. It was one of the primary recruiters. And I'm sure they still do recruit a ton of people today.
It's got to be a lot harder for them, though, because we certainly are in demand in every industry across the board, you know, so it's been exciting to see the explosion of demand for people like me and you.
Yeah, we definitely got lucky picking the right field at the right time. I always say it's not that I don't think I did a good job and I wasn't good at it, which helped my career, but there was also the luck element that it exploded underneath me as I had joined it. And that definitely was a help. So the kids today coming out of school, the opportunities, it's so far beyond what there was for you and I back in the day. And even your banking foray there, back when you initially joined, you know, banks were far ahead of most other industries. And today most every industry is going to have analytics and data science going on to some degree. But, you know, it wasn't even at the around 2000 that there were a couple industries that were heavy into it and a lot of them that were hardly doing anything. And so even to get into these careers, it wasn't like today where you could say, I'm really interested in this industry or that industry. It was more of, well, you know, back then, finance banking was one of the primary employers of anybody with a background like ours.
Yep, absolutely.
So you haven't only done banking, though. I know you've done some consulting and some work in some other areas. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, like I said, I've always seen myself as an analyst first, and in many ways, a teacher always. And I love this area of analytics. I've spent so much of my career trying to figure out how to do it well. And I've cracked that nut, I think, better than most, because it isn't just the statistics. It isn't just the programming. It really is, as an applied statistician, as an applied analyst, how do I actually make this relevant to the organization that I'm serving? What are our engagement models? What are our operating rhythms? What is the set of foundational philosophies and principles I bring to the job? Those are the things that transcend industry. You know, I don't know about your experience, Bill, but in my experience, I got my master's degree, I went to work, and there was no one there who could tell me or who was even thinking about how do I engage effectively with a business partner? How do I ask questions to understand the problem they're really trying to solve so I can help them solve it instead of just the drip, drip, drip of Kathleen, can you get me this data? They're clearly after something bigger than just a data element. They're after an answer to a question. In the early days, in trying to understand that underlying question, my investigation would sometimes come across as pushback, which was the exact opposite. But I didn't know how to communicate that I was trying to be a better partner to them, that I wasn't challenging them. I wasn't questioning them. I was trying to understand so I could better serve them. That exists across banking, healthcare, insurance. And so I often think about what I do less as consulting and more as advising. But all of these types of industries that I've had the chance to work with, you know, again, healthcare, insurance, banking, obviously, retail, manufacturing, the questions are the same. People are not struggling with, how do I build a model? People are not generally struggling with, how do I build a Tableau dashboard? What people are struggling with, how do I know I'm working on the right questions? How do I get my business partner to adopt these solutions? How do I get my business partner to go beyond just asking for data and talking to me about the opportunities and problems they're working on? That is nothing that is taught anywhere. Any of us who knows how to do it learned how to do it through trial and error. I'm still a teacher. I want to help anyone who's trying to be great at this to get great at it faster than I was able to get great at it myself. And so it's been eye-opening to see the consistency of problem across all these industries, but also very rewarding to be able to take what I learned through trial and error over the last 20 years and apply these lessons so broadly to so many industries.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I agree 100% about it. I think it's even worse than you said it, in that it's not just that nobody taught us how to do that, but you know, again, today, if you're starting a career in analytics and data science, you're an accepted as an important role that can be part of the business process. Whereas in our day, it wasn't just no one was telling us to do it, but people looked down on us kind of like almost like you're calling the help desk, right? You weren't viewed as part of a team at all. You were viewed as somebody who they'd call and order some data or an analysis and come back. And to your point, there were many years there where the idea that I would ask a question or I would try and understand more, they'd be, why are you even asking this? I just
How
need my data.
How dare you?
Yeah.
How dare you?
Let's go prove me this data. That's what I need. Why are you even engaging? Right. So I think that's a big change that's happened over the last couple of decades. That's a great change for all of us.
I think so. But I would say that there was another challenge that I think still persists. And unfortunately, it is a story that we analysts ourselves may have planted. And that is the idea that these decisions will be data driven, as though I am in the driver's seat now telling the business what they should be doing. And in fact, I think many of us interpreted our roles in the early days in that way. And unfortunately, I think in many cases, and I have encountered this in many, many places that I've advised, that still does exist. And so I've tried to also adopt different language. I never ask, tell me what you're trying to solve. Tell me what you're going to do with it. I say, help me understand what you are trying to achieve so I can better meet your needs. I don't talk about data-driven decisions. I talk about data-informed decisions. And so it's a very subtle but very intentional way of communicating a different mentality. I've actually always been okay with the fact that analytics in most companies is a service organization. I don't think in my mind that minimizes our impact, and I don't think it reduces our importance. But I see it as, in some ways, knowing my place. I'm there to help a business leader achieve her goals, achieve them faster, and reach higher than she otherwise would have thought. And that takes a certain level of professional humility. When it comes to the analytics, I have no humility at all. I don't trust anyone's analysis but my own. But that's my expertise. I also recognize that the business leader is the expert in her space. And her strategy is her strategy for a reason. And my job is to support that strategy and earn the credibility to influence. To influence the strategy and influence the decisions, but they belong to her. She owns them ultimately.
So this whole thread that you just went through, I think, explains the move that you made at one point, where you took the bold move of actually leaving the corporate world for a while and starting your own consulting firm before, during COVID, coming back, you know, to your current role at Experian. But what tell me a little bit about what it took for you to get the nerve to go and start your own consulting firm for a few years.
Oh gosh. I'm cautious about saying this, but I was very, very lucky. Well, I say I'm lucky. My husband says I'm prepared, you know, and so I'm able to seize opportunities when they're presented. COVID came along And, you know, I've been talking about getting back to California for 10 years. I grew up out here. My sisters are here. My mother is still here. And COVID came along. And if anybody remembers those very early days, many of us were quite worried about people of a certain age. And it appeared that the virus was attacking them at much, much higher rates. And there was a lot of fear. And I thought, you know, if anything were to happen to my mother, I would wish forever that I'd had more time with her. And so 2 weeks after the governor shut down the state of Ohio, I was living in Ohio at the time, my husband and I made the decision to quit my job, sell the house, and move to Southern California. When we left, when we packed up the truck, loaded the 2 kids and the 2 dogs, we had no idea where we would sleep 2 weeks later. I had no job, and frankly, I had no plan. Wow. So that's a good, you know? Huh. So I thought,
that's
okay.
Bold.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, and people have said that was a brave choice, but it didn't feel like a brave choice. It felt like a necessity. And so, you know, they say necessity is the mother of invention. So I had this extended period of time to start really exploring some new areas. I started doing a lot more public speaking, which I still do. And I am invited by, you know, several very well-known companies to give analytics talks to their internal analytics communities. That's very rewarding. I love doing that. I meet one-on-one with analytics leaders and business leaders who are trying to make sense of analytics and need a place that is unattached to any of the politics within the organization to just ask those questions they might not be comfortable, for whatever reason, asking out loud within the organization, and to just talk through what are the pros and cons and what are the things that aren't working and what are the personalities you're dealing with. So I find all of that very, very rewarding. What I learned and why I'm back in the corporate world now, which is where I want to stay, is that I love doing the work, but being a small business owner, the majority of the work is building the business. And that's not what I want to do. I want to do the analytics. I want to do the advising. I want to be sharing the information. And so I have found a hybrid way of doing that. So that works really well for me. It's also very, very exciting then, while the majority of my time is still focused and defined by my current role at Experian, I get to continue to work across a broad swath of industries. I'm continuing to learn about continued evolution of our practice, how it is applied in different industries, the similarities across. And again, some of those are similarities across time. Healthcare is particularly exciting because I see them in very much the same spot we were in 15, 20 years ago in banking. And so to be able to help them make the progress in 5 to 7 years that it took us 15 years is, you know, is wonderful. And I get to do that, you know, by leveraging, you know, the sort of, I'll call it stability and consistency of the work I do for Experian, and then being able to engage more selectively in my own time.
Well, what advice would you have, you know, now that I'm at the university here? I always like to throw in a little something explicitly for the students. If you were to talk to somebody who's going to be graduating, whether it be this December or next May, what would be a piece of advice you'd give them to help them get started in their career in the world of analytics and data science today?
I've got a few. Number one, if you're graduating from a business analytics program, think very carefully about how much of that program was programming, algorithmic, computer science, and how much of it were the fundamentals of statistics. I see analytics as more of the statistics and the study of data, actually making sense of data, that really hard thinking. 80% of what we do in most industries who are leveraging applied analytics established industries, I would say, established companies, I would say, is investigative analytics. And that means pulling data, summarizing that data for myself, studying that data to find an answer to a specific question. I never encountered that type of homework question in graduate school. So that's an area, you know, really understand that it's about studying the data and making sense of it and drawing conclusions and making recommendations. It isn't just providing all of the data and interesting things you found. And to do that, having a baseline understanding of how really just understanding data is very, very important. So a lot of these business analytics programs now focus on the computer science and the algorithms. Don't forget the statistics. The statistics are very, very important. Soft skills are everything. And not everybody is great at soft skills. Not everybody wants to be the lead and engage with the partner and meet the partner where they are. They don't have to understand what I do. It is not my job to educate them on what I do. My job is to understand enough of what they do so that I can apply these very, very powerful tools that I understand. They're not allowed to touch my tools. I'm not trying to teach anybody how to do machine learning. That is not my job. My job is to answer a question, make a recommendation, build a solution, and help the company make more money. That's my job. And so understanding that that's my job is very, very important. And I think maybe the third piece of advice is to remember that analytics, as it's often applied, not always, but again, in my experience and what I've seen in established companies who are using analytics to make their own decisions more intelligently, it's still a fairly new practice. And we haven't worked out all the bugs. Some of us have put a lot of effort into getting better, but it's very, very likely that you will land in a place that's been doing it a certain way for a long time, and that may or may not match much of what you're hearing me talk about today. It's going to take some patience. It's going to take some motivation and some ownership of the problem, a grassroots effort to evolve your organization. If you're walking into an organization that still believes your job is to just get the data.
I think that's some really good advice, and to be respectful of your time, I appreciate you spending so much time with me, and I know the students are going to love to hear some of that. So I'll just thank you again for your insights, as always, and I enjoy talking with you every time. So thank you.
Bill, I appreciate this so much. I'm flattered that you asked. I've loved the work we've done together, and I hope any of your students who see this and are inspired connect with me on LinkedIn, because I love to meet especially young people who are embarking on this path. We have such an opportunity to make such a difference, and little tweaks here and there are all the difference. So thank you, Bill.